Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's start with Luke Kennard, since you have a piece about Luke up. Obviously, we got a lot. We have the Grizzlies week that was. We have tonight's game against the Knicks. But we'll start with Luke Kennard. You wrote a piece about Luke. And, of course, the backdrop here is that December 29th is the key day. Why is that, Chris?
That's the day the Brooklyn Nets traded Dorian Finney-Smith to the Los Angeles Lakers and not to the Memphis Grizzlies, which would have meant Luke Kennard packing his bags.
By the way, this is one... Like, you hear stuff about trades and discussions all the time, right?
Yep.
It's not every day that you hear, really with a fair definitiveness, that the Grizzlies did offer this deal.
Right.
And so what were the, like...
That one leaked out. It's not unusual for trade stuff to leak out, but that one leaked out very strongly.
Yeah.
Unusually strongly. There are different theories as to why and how that happened. My guess is that it was so close to being done that people leaked it in anticipation of the trade happening.
I see.
It wasn't leaked as a, this might happen. It was leaked as a, this is about to happen, yeah. Get ready to roll it out kind of
and
thing.
And it wasn't are players who are discussed or like, we had the exact
I think Mark Stein, his first person, put that out. I think he thought the trade was about to happen, so you go and report it like minutes before it goes through kind of thing, and then it didn't go through.
As you point out in the piece, not the most awkward non-trade in Grizzlies history.
Or even the second.
So how would you rank them?
So, number one for me, because I was kind of in the middle of it, was the Brooks thing, where in the middle of a game, Adrian Wojnarowski reports the Grizzlies are trading Dylan Brooks to the Phoenix Suns in a three-team trade.
And what was it for?
Kelly Oubre was going to be involved, and there was other stuff.
Piece, right?
And like.
Yeah.
I was sitting courtside during the game, and I looked at that, and I said, that doesn't sound right. And I texted a source, two sources within the Grizzlies organization, and both of them came back and said, no, we're trading Marshawn Brooks. And so I tweet out, the Grizzly sources say they're trading Marshawn Brooks, and then someone from Phoenix, a media person in Phoenix, tweeted out, no, it's Dylan Brooks. And then we found out, 30 minutes later, the teams found out that they were confused with each other, and it all sort of came apart. So that is number one by far for me. And then there was also the time that they tried to trade OJ Mayo right at the deadline and the fax was late and the trade didn't go through.
Who was that for? That was for...
It was going to be for the pick that ended up being Kawhi Leonard, which is not to say the Grizzlies were taking Kawhi Leonard with the pick, but it would have been that draft pick. It was going to be to Indiana for Josh McRoberts and a first-round pick.
Josh McRoberts, the Duke guy, yeah. So anyway, those are the two most awkward non-trades. So you talked to Luke Kennard about this.
Yep.
What was his sentiment?
He kind of smirked at it a little bit. Like, I'd ask him, so, you know, what did they say to you when you know, you almost got traded? And he just sort of smirked and said, you know, it's a business. This happens. He said all the right stuff, but he sort of rolled his eyes at it a little bit. I think he's taking it in stride because it is a business. It's like, you know, all these guys have been in trade discussions before,
right.
Most of them. You know, maybe not John Morant or Jaren Jackson or Desmond
Bane,
but all the rest of them.
Hey, and how many times has he been traded twice? Luke's already been traded twice, I guess?
He got traded from the Clippers to the Grizzlies. I'd have to go back and look and see how he went from Detroit to the Clippers, whether it was trade or signing. It was probably a trade, but I don't know that for certain. So, like, you know, it happens. But he's been playing really well. And I don't think these things are connected to each other. I think it's more coincidence that he's played better since the trade.
And the role has changed, too.
The role has changed. And what I was really interested in, so the night, and he just had a bad game Saturday against Utah, but I wrote this sort of ahead of that game. And I wrote it sort of in response to the two previous games. Because the two previous games, Friday night against the Pelicans, which maybe not the most memorable game he's played, but maybe the best game he's played as a Grizzly. And then the night before, two nights before, against the Hornets. So you put those two games together, 50 points across two games. It was the first time he had scored 20 points in back-to-back games since, I think, 2019. He made 14 threes across the two games, which tied the most he's had in back-to-back games as a Grizzly. And also, by the way, he dunked for the first time in 5 years. So he had a great couple nights.
Right.
And that's sort of what inspired me to write it, was this combination of, this guy almost got traded, the trade deadline is still looming, he might still get traded, And here he's having the best moment he's had as a Memphis Grizzly. And it's in the context of, to get back to your question, of a role change. And one of the things I did, I went back, I looked at these two games. I went back and watched all of it. Not the whole game. So all his shots, all his assists, all of that. And I went back to the previous time he'd made 14 threes in two games, which was right after the trade in 2023.
Okay.
I was curious to see, does this look the same? And it doesn't. It's radically different. Back then, he was just like a three-point specialist. Like, the only shot in those two games in 2023 where he made 14 threes, the only shot attempt he had in those two games that was not a three-pointer was a putback layup. That was
right,
it.
Right.
And the assists he had, there was like half as many, and they were almost all like, you know, you're standing outside the three-point line and you're moving the ball from behind the three-point line. And what he's doing now in this offense and in this role is he's operating more as a combo guard, not as a spot-up shooter. And so he's handling the ball more. He's getting into the lane more. He's making more kinds of plays. And it's really unlocked him offensively in the last few weeks. Whether that continues or not, I don't know. Will he even continue with the Grizzlies or not? I don't know. But it's been happening.
It also corresponds to seeing some bad health. Like in the piece, he acknowledges he was not at his best.
He missed the first eight games of the season with foot soreness. So he would get a late start. And then he just wasn't playing that well for a few weeks. And then there was one, he sort of got put out of the rotation, but it lasted one game because injuries keep happening and you get back in.
Right.
But he had not really hit his stride until mid-December. So his recent stride didn't start with the almost trade. It started a couple weeks before that. But he has been a different player over the past month and a half than he was in like the first month and a half. That's for sure.
And works well with Dez.
Yeah, I think so. But the other thing is, even if you put the whole season together, the numbers are still small. You have basically three half-season samples, so partial season samples. You have after he was traded 2 years, after the Grizzlies acquired him 2 years ago.
Yeah.
25 games at the end of the season. And then last season, I consider last season a contaminated sample for all things, all Grizzlies lineup data, so I just sort of throw it out. There's too much junk involved. But if you look at the 25 or whatever games he played after they traded for him 2 years ago, and the 30-whatever games he's played this season, the numbers are it tells the same story in terms of the lineup data. That is, the Grizzlies' offense takes off. It's good already these two seasons, but it gets so much better when Luke Kennard's on the floor, and it gets so much better still if he's on the floor with either John Morant or Desmond Bane. It's like 99th percentile stuff when he is on the floor with those guys. And part of the reason they acquired him is because they thought his shooting threat, and he's one of the two or three best pure shooters in the world. There's other issues with his game, but that's not it. The Grizzlies thought you put this level of shooting and offensive threat with these guys who can really make plays, it really is going to open it up for them and take off. And that has been true in regular season basketball. I don't know whether that's going to be true in postseason basketball. The sample's too small to see. Yeah. And that was the idea.
Now you put him with this version of Jaren, too.
That's
like,
right.
How the hell do you stop that?
So that was always the idea. And I wonder if the idea is ever really going to get tested. If he gets traded a week from now, it won't. You know?
But the likelihood, for the reasons you say, the likelihood a trade is happening is always less than than it will.
I think more than likely he's still with the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
But then you have the issue of, in the regular season, what he adds offensively has been greater than what he takes off the table defensively, but he does take things off the table defensively.
Right.
And is the value proposition of what he gives you on offense versus what he costs you on defense, does that stay a positive value proposition in playoff basketball? And that's
There's also the question of all these questions are, what's the alternative, of course? Like,
that's
who's
right.
the alternative?
And right now, two of them are sitting on the bench in street clothes.
Right. And so, and then when they come back, will Vince Williams be Vince Williams, the best version
that's
of
right.
Vince Williams? Or will it be a Vince Williams who can't make a shot?
Yeah.
Right? And if that's...
There's an untested theory with Marcus Smart, too. How's that going to go?
And at least we're seeing the Luke, Luke thing. All right. You did... Another point you made, though, was that one of the interesting things is that when he was doing this 2 years ago, it was in the old offense. Now it's in the new offense. And the point you made in the piece was the new offense does not, in fact, seem to play to his strengths.
It's a mixed bag. I think part of my instigation for this was when I watched him play lately, him having the ball to me seems to like quicken his pulse. It provokes more aggression when you got the ball and you got to do something instead of when you're standing around waiting for the ball to find your hands. So I think having the ball more has gotten his juices flowing and has got him playing more aggressive. But this offense is predicated in part on guys just beating their man off the dribble. And that is not the strength of Luke Kennard's game. So I think there are times when you see him like challenged in that way. I do think, and this is something I've noted in other contexts, not just in this Kennard piece lately, I really, watching the game, my sense is that they're starting to use more like Zach Edey screens and more, they're starting to sprinkle in more conventional stuff with their unconventional offense. I think that's probably
Is that
to
ever,
the benefit.
By the way, wishful thinking on your part? Because it's something you've wanted. You've thought made sense, right?
No, I don't think it is. I think, because I've noted this, I probably haven't read about it because other stuff keeps happening, but like one of these games, it must have been the Pelicans game because I wrote that game night. I didn't write the Utah game. Like they started the game with like three straight high pick and roll Zach Edey, you know, plays. And it's like John Morant comes off the screen and it shoots a three. And then I do think that's starting to happen. It's hard to get put numbers on it unless you have like access to like, you know, proprietary stuff I don't have access to. So,
All right. Over the weekend, they beat the Pelicans Friday night with an incandescent second half, 77 points, 60% shooting from the field, 50% shooting from three. That one you had Bane with 14 and assists and Luke going off for 27. You did write about that game. Anything else particularly striking from that game?
Luke had the big game, and I didn't write that game night because I was saving it for the bigger column. But just the way their offense just down the second half, their offense just was overwhelming. You know, it was the shooting, it was the offensive rebounds, it was the lack of turnovers, it was the whole thing. It was the whole thing clicking really in that game.
Thoughts on the Pelicans?
The Pelicans aren't good. I mean, they've got some players, but like, you know, at this point in the season, you know. The Utah game, I mean, the Edey
stuff. I was going to get to Edey. He had two good games, right? And a particularly good one against Utah.
Yeah, no. It, you know, the Edey, like, the entertainment value of Edey, like, turning and like, going for the guy, like, was great. I think Edey had a really good stretch, and then he's had sort of a downturn, and now, you know, this weekend has been sort of a pop back up. I think it'll be up and down, but I think it's sort of similar to Luke Kennard in the aspect of getting a guy involved. You know, getting Edey involved in plays sort of helps you get going. And when you have role player types who aren't always going to have the ball, if you get them involved, I think that's helpful for them. The thing about the Utah game that was a little bit more under the radar, though, and partly because it just happens all the time now, but that Utah game, Jaren could have gone for 60 if they'd wanted to.
Right.
He could not. There was no one who could guard him on the Jazz. He could have scored every single time down the floor.
Ten of 14.
But that's bad basketball. But that's what they could have done, you know?
10 of 14, 28 points, all four games last week north of 20 points.
But literally that Utah game, I think that could have been the night he went for 60 if they wanted to do it.
The matchup with Walker Kessler's obviously, like we've seen him play well against, Edey play well against Gobert.
Big. Edey's a very, it's not quite singular, but a rare kind of player, right? And so guys who are that unusual are often like more situational kind of players, unless you're like really great, like to mix sports. Edey is not an every down back right now. Will he become so good that he is one in a couple years? Maybe. But I think the idea that he is better in some matchups than others, I think is perfectly fine right now. And like tonight will be interesting against the Knicks, because if you remember playing Carl Anthony Towns in a playoff series a few years ago, Steven Adams was off the floor very quickly. And this is a team that like that Minnesota team 3 years ago, is starting Towns at center and surrounding him with more perimeter players. Can Edey hold up in that kind of matchup? That'll be interesting to see tonight.
Before I move on to the Knicks, GG 15-6 against Utah.
Yeah, that was his best game he's had so far. He's been rebounding well. He's been finding shots. You know, I already got people mad at me for reasons I'm not clear about GG Jackson.
What are they mad about?
I guess because I'm not ready to put him in the starting lineup or something. I don't know. GG's been good. I think there are some fans who are so eager for GG to be a certain thing that there's not patience with it. I mean, you look at that game, he had a good game. He played 24 minutes. They beat the Jazz by 2 in those 24 minutes. In those 24 minutes, they beat the Jazz by 20.
Right.
Like, it's going to be a process, and it's going to be really partly about not him getting up shots, but him playing good team defense, him functioning in a team context, and they're going to bring that along, and we'll see where it goes. And it could go absolutely anywhere in the short term. He could be the sixth man averaging 15 points a game in the playoffs or better. He could not play at all. I really don't know.
And I think even saying that possibility is why people are enraged that he could not be in the playoff.
That could
rotation.
Very easily happen. Right. It could also easily happen. I really don't know.
Right. Okay, Knicks tonight. Your thoughts?
It's a really interesting game. It'll be the first time they played the season. They only play each other twice because of the conferences. It's the third place teams in each conference at the moment. Grizzlies are close to tied with Houston, but not quite. And so there are two teams with top six records in the NBA, with top five offenses in the NBA, but it's a real contrast in style and approach. The Grizzlies are first in pace and play the deepest rotation in the league. The Knicks are 25 in pace and play the heaviest starters minutes and the tightest rotation in the league. Desmond Bane leads the Grizzlies at 29.9 minutes per game. Karl Anthony Towns plays 34.7, and he is fifth on the Knicks. So it'll be interesting game tonight.
That trade has been slam dunk for the Knicks.
I think so. I mean, we haven't seen it in the context of playoff basketball, but yeah, definitely.
And then the other thing you have is that I think we've seen, I mean, I don't know the Grizzlies' record is Madison Square Garden, but it means something to them to play there. Like, we've seen that from Ja, right? Like,
big stage, bright lights, big city. And so it's not, I don't think, a national TV game, but like, you only go there once when you're a Western Conference team.
We also have the Celts and Rockets tonight, I think. Is that right? Celts and Rockets tonight? I think that's...
Yeah, hopefully the Celtics can do what the Cavs couldn't do when they actually beat the Rockets.
Well, so here you have that. So I was going to say, like, I know you don't believe in them necessarily as a playoff team. They are 8-2 in their last 10. They've beaten Memphis twice, the Nuggets by 20, and the Cavs twice in that 8-2.
Yeah, I guess that's a couple things I'd say about that. Sort of a point, counterpoint on things on opposite sides of the scale.
Right.
Cleveland was without Evan Mobley in one of those games, and he had just come back from injury in another. In between those two losses to Houston, they lost to Philly. So it could be like this is a bad stretch for Cleveland. Those games were also like single possession games, basically, or whatever. I think the combined winning total for the Rockets in those two games was like 5 points. So I wouldn't make too much of it, but I would make something of it.
Right.
And one thing I think has changed with Houston's been good all season from the jump. One reason I would take them more seriously now than early in the season is because what's happening with Amen Thompson. Like, this is not a mirage. This guy is like really, really, really good. And he's entered the starting lineup. I think he's going to stay there. And I think he might be the best player on that team.
The other thing that's happened is that Jalen Green has been on a total heater. Like, it wasn't just against the Grizzlies. He's shooting 43% in January from three on 98 attempts. So, like, he's been on a total heater.
Can you match his offensive talent with consistency of production and impact of production, right? He's always been a guy who's a highlight guy who can get points. But can he do that in the context of winning basketball? That's always a lot. It's a trick with young, talented young players, right? Like, it's a process for guys. A
couple other things in the West, by the way. You have the T-Wolves. And it is interesting. The Grizzlies have this thing with the T-Wolves. You know, the T-Wolves can't beat the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies can't beat Houston. But T-Wolves throttled Denver over the weekend. And Gobert was really good on Jokic. Like, it was that, I don't know. Like, that's a team that we've sort of said, they got too many problems. But that was obviously a great showing over the weekend for them. And the Clippers have won 6 of 8. They're playing really well. And they got Kawhi back at least in limited minutes.
Well, that's a real wild card. Like, Kawhi's been good when he plays, right?
Right.
If you tell me Kawhi Leonard's playing like as many playoff games as they can acquire,
right?
Who knows? You know, I mean, we've seen this before, but it's hard to have faith in it.
Well, that's as you look at where the Grizzlies could finish up. You just have no idea where you want to finish up because you have no idea what the hell is it going to be. Like, Dallas has lost 11 of 16. But are they going to be healthy? Are they going to, like, who are you going to be matching up with if you were 2 or 3 or 4?
Yeah, you know, Drew made a point something like this on our pod about, like, first round matchups. I just threw my hands up. I don't know about first round matchups. The one thing I think you could say is that if you believe that OKC is the best team in the West, which they are in the regular season.
Right.
If you believe that, you want to be in the 2-3 and try to see if you can avoid them till you get to the conference finals. You know? Right.